Welcome to War Room, the official podcast of the U.S. Army War College online journal, graciously supported by the Army War College Foundation. Please join the conversation at warroom.armywarcollege.edu. We hope you enjoy the program.
Hello, and welcome to A Better Peace, the War Room podcast. I'm Jacqueline Witt, professor of strategy here at the Army War College, and the War Room podcast editor. Thanks for listening. And I'll remind you now that you can subscribe to our podcast via your favorite subscription service, so you'll be sure not to miss anything. On today's episode, we're going to take a closer look at the challenge of logistics and sustainment for expeditionary forces. One of the hallmarks of the U.S. military, especially in the recent past, has been its ability to supply its forces effectively over long distances and with a pretty incredible level of provision. But expeditionary forces face some unique challenges and might require a different way of thinking about logistics and sustainment. So joining me in the studio today are three professionals in the field. We have Colonel Matt Schatzkin, who is a faculty member at the Center for Strategic Leadership, Colonel Bobby Bryant, and Colonel Fred Maddox, and both of those are resident students in the class of 2018 and logistics officers. So we have a full studio today. So thanks, gentlemen, for joining me for this important conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Good. So, Bobby, I'm going to throw the first question over to you, which is a definitional one. And it might seem like a simple question, but I gather from talking to you all that it's actually a little bit more complicated. But what exactly do we mean by expeditionary forces?
Simply put, expeditionary forces is a task organization that's able to deploy rapidly to an austere location and then quickly transition into combat operations or a mission.
Okay. And is that definition sort of standard across the board, or might we find sort of different pieces of that important for different folks?
So I think beyond the joint publication or wherever that, you know, the definition is, and it is in a joint publication, I think we quickly see a lot of divergence in how people react to that term. For one, within the Army, I think you generally have two camps, and one larger camp is that the Army isn't really an expeditionary force. The Marines are an expeditionary force. The Army is a strategic land power force. And then another camp is that, hey, we can do both. We can do expeditionary operations, and we can do longer-term, more deliberate, larger-scale land power operations. Mm-hmm. So the problem goes beyond the simple definition of expeditionary forces. I think the problem extends to a lack of defining the environment that constitutes expeditionary operations. Because my experience is that it's not difficult to deploy a force anywhere in the world on short notice in the Army. The challenge is sustaining that force, because that involves capabilities, infrastructure, and procedures beyond that force's own capability. So there's a dependency there. And if that environment isn't described ahead of time and those dependencies aren't described ahead of time, then we're just kind of reacting on the fly. And that's where the friction and the problems come.
Sure. It sounds like a couple of things. One is maybe some disagreement about whether the Army should be doing expeditionary things at all, whether it's part of the sort of mission set. And then the second is really thinking through what are the consequences of expeditionary operations when and if they're going to be part of the Army's job, what the Army is sent to do. Can I clarify a couple of things? It sounds like in any sustainment mission, you've got considerations about time, the environment, and the task for which the force is sent to go do things. And of those three things, what are the most important considerations for expeditionary forces, or is it just the combination?
So I think an underpinning theme or driver of behavior in all expeditionary operations, and when we think about expeditionary and crisis, those two very much come hand in hand, is the urgency. of the situation. And so it's not a deliberate buildup. It's not where we're moving forces into a country and we have 6 months lead time. This is, everything was due yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And so that factor really puts a spin on everything else. There's just not enough time to get everything to a place to where we need it to be to do what we want to do.
Okay. So the urgency of this, so is this one of the reasons that we might think about, you said crisis, it sounds like sort of humanitarian assistance and disaster relief would often be in this category of like needing an urgent response, needing something done yesterday. Are there other types of expeditionary sort of tasks or requirements that we might see?
So I think that that expeditionary operations, there is a large overlap with crisis disaster relief type. And then there's another section that does not overlap. So when we think about Panama, that was a quick, urgent fury. We think about a quick reaction that we want. And back around 2000, this is what the Army wanted to do. The phrase was, we're going back to an expeditionary army. So rather than being forward deployed with large forces in Germany and other places like that, we're kind of back in the United States and, hey, we can reach out and touch someone at any time and achieve these effects. So those aren't necessarily connected to a disaster relief or humanitarian crisis. Those are just really to achieve and further national policy.
Okay.
Where other means of achieving national policy strategy have failed or not been effective in terms of economic, informational, diplomatic, et cetera, then, hey, we can reach out and achieve a military effect for political means that's not related or connected to a disaster relief.
It's interesting how many lifetimes ago 2000 seems like now.
Sure.
And so that seems like a really different conversation, obviously, because we've been in operations in Iraq and Afghanistan for a long time now.
Sure. And and this contributes to the stuff we talked about at the beginning.
And all over the world, and more conversations about regionally aligned forces.
Yep.
And sort of forward deployed forces that are going to stay. Fred, if I can bring you into the conversation too, if you were going to sort of compare and contrast some of the operations that the U.S. Army's been doing for, say, the past 15 or 17 years and these sort of expeditionary forces that we might think about in the future, how are the logistical and sustainment requirements different for the two sort of kinds of operations that we might think about?
So I'll dovetail in what Colonel Shaskin discussed and give you a little more of a understanding of it. The first part of it, we looked at the definition that Bobby discussed, and it was the rapid deployment, the quick transitions, and then to moving right into a military operation. A lot of that is really just being able to conduct operations immediately. And that's what really getting at the crux of it is being able to rapidly deploy and then conduct immediate operations. So looking at that, when we talk about the environment, that is really the big piece, the difference that separates when we look at a disaster humanitarian effort versus going into a military action, is that there is some type of contest or contention that is trying to prevent our entrance into the area and then also preventing our ability to actually sustain forces that are there. So when we look back at our historical examples, most of them have been exceptionally well sustained over the time period. So when we look at Desert Storm, we look at OEF and OIF, all those have long-term great examples of sustainment because of the way we've improved our sustainment nodes, improved our infrastructure over time. But when you look at it discreetly at the point of when we first entered into the engagement, so at the beginning of Desert Storm, at the beginning of OEF, when forces immediately went into Afghanistan, you don't see those great examples point out. What you actually see is a lot of small hiccups and issues that developed quickly because of the lack of infrastructure that was present, the lack of capacity that was there to be able to receive forces and quickly organize the support and sustainment that was going in.
And so if in an expeditionary environment, if the whole point is quickly in and out, those hiccups, those bumps at the beginning are the thing that matter most, and the United States' ability to sustain operations for years or decades is we're good at that.
Right.
Got it.
Right.
But those first few weeks and months matter a lot. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. And you gave us a couple of examples recently. Are there other historical examples that we can look at, either of success or failure, where you think the U.S. has done well at this initial sort of expeditionary, quick, urgent establishment of?
Well, being on the ground in Haiti, so Operation Unified Response in 2010 in response to the earthquake there, I was on the ground with that. And sure, I would say there's, I hesitate to use terms like good and bad, effective and less than effective. So I think in an overall an effective response, there may be some caution areas though. And so, one, just by the nature of the brute force of the operation to get through the urgency. And this takes us back to the two camps that I described that look at this. I think there's one camp that says, hey, we need to get better at this, and so we really need to be critical and look at our performance of how we do in expeditionary operations. And there's another camp, kind of dovetailing off Fred's comments, that says, hey, it's just going to be 3 weeks of hard living.
Embrace the suck.
Embrace the suck, get through it, and then we'll be able to improve and optimize things. And so on the commercial side of things, we call this the warm-up period when we start a process. We have stuff where we're getting shaking up the system, we're getting all the kinks out of the system, and we kind of throw that data away. And then we take, once we've established the system and it's running, then we optimize that. Well, the other camp would say you could lose the whole ball game during this 3 weeks of hard living. If we're trying to achieve a strategic effect of national military strategy within that time frame, and sustainment hinders that, then we could lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of lucky in Haiti, and it was a very permissive environment. Folks weren't shooting at us. They weren't threatening. They weren't denying us access.
Right. The devastation and the chaos are there, but
right.
But people generally want
they
assistance and
generally
want
right with some right. constraints in terms of getting supplies in and things like that. So we have to be a little bit careful. The other thing about these kind of instances is that it kind of works against itself. There's not a whole lot of data collection going on in terms of what's suboptimal, and so I would propose that we almost don't know what we don't know. And so a specific example is response times on repair parts. So, and this is what I go back to, it's more than just forces. The organization as a whole, the enterprise, so to speak, beyond the tactical unit, isn't necessarily expeditionary. So the response time for a repair part for a weapon system doesn't necessarily get faster in an
just
expeditionary environment. Exactly.
Yesterday.
And that's kind of mind-blowing. It was certainly mind-blowing for me to live through that. And so when we start tracing this down to the readiness of systems in an expeditionary environment and what is truly achievable based on our current systems, I would throw out there that we potentially don't know the extent of that problem.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It makes absolute sense, but it's also maybe a little disheartening, right, at the same time.
Well, yeah, and I don't mean to be doom and gloom, but I think if it all depends on what we want to be.
Correct.
That's the bottom line. It goes back to those two camps. If we want to be an expeditionary force and have those capabilities, then we probably need to dig deeper into this problem. If we don't, then we can go back to the lessons we've learned from 13 years in deliberate campaigns and get really good there.
Good at that.
So it all depends on what we want to be.
Yeah. So the point, to emphasize the point, a lot of the lessons learned that came out of the Desert Storm, the OEF and OIF adventures were, we have a strategic setup with our sustainment, mostly through the Defense Logistics Agency, that is geared to supporting our forces in CONUS as well as globally. But nothing in the system changes specifically when we deploy. We still use the same processes and the same avenues and routes as a deployment, as if we were garrisoned or as if we were in a normal contingency or in a humanitarian action. Nothing changes for I want to get there now.
So there's sort of a system, and one thing I'm hearing is maybe a suggestion that maybe we need some differentiation in the system itself at a sort of enterprise level in order to sustain different types of forces doing different missions.
Right. And that kind of takes us back to the two camps. And I believe there's consternation. So a way would be two not separate systems, but two distinct systems to view the framework, the respective framework. So are we an expeditionary? Okay, Lynn, that we have a way of approaching that, and then we transition to a little bit more deliberate stability operation, and we have a way of approaching that. That's a way of addressing the entire problem. There are folks that have a problem with that. Hey, one system is good enough, you know, that kind of thing. So I would even back up one step and propose that let's just establish the framework for what we're talking about. And that's the environment. Beyond the forces, let's just characterize the environment. Let's describe the environment, and then let's use that description to evaluate our current processes and systems and see if they meet those requirements. Like Fred said, we may find that, this just isn't possible to meet these expeditionary environmental needs using this system. So we need to address that. And then from there, the solutions should fall.
So a good example is if you go to Disney World, and you know, maybe 20 years ago or so, there were no express lines.
Right.
There was no, you know, express pass or easy pass to get you to the front of the line. Everyone waited, and if you were a VIP, you would probably get escorted to the front of the line and get into the, you know, the ride you wanted. Now we have the little express pass where if you pay a little extra, you get escorted to the front. Well, the discussion that we're having now is what happens if everyone who's in line needs to get to the front of the line and get on the ride at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's what we're really talking about. It's a moment where you need to get the entire Army, or not the entire Army, but a significant amount of the Army forces to another location, but you don't have the assets and resources to do it.
Okay. Yeah.
No, that's an interesting sort of analogy, and it strikes me that you have entire industries like built up over optimizing your Disney visit,
right?
Mm-hmm. Like how do you work the system such as it is to make your visit most enjoyable or things like that.
That's another
sort of element to this. If we think about what the Army and what the other joint services have been doing so far to try to mitigate some of the problem, what capabilities and capacities do we see sort of in development that are trying to address the problems that you've identified?
Well, one of our recommendations is that we should continue to develop new technology. What's going on right now, the Army's looking into future vertical lift. The Army's looking into reducing demand and potentially relooking the BCT 4 structure so that the BCT is more semi-independent, so it can sort of sustain itself for a short period of time until sustainment forces can follow and provide that sustainment.
Great. And are those sort of capabilities or the things that you've just sort of mentioned, do those aggregate? Is that the point, is that you can sort of add capability and capacity or gain efficiencies sort of on top of each other, or are they all discrete elements within this system?
So I think, you know, my thought is that when you approach this problem, you've got to do two things. You've got to minimize the time at which urgency is greater than your ability to meet requirements. So and you can do that through technology, you can do that through capabilities, but this expeditionary window, but more importantly, the time that you just can't get everything there, like Fred described, or the things that you want there. And the urgency does not go away. So being able to decrease that time, but at the same time, mitigate the vulnerabilities of the forces that are there. So some forces are going to get there. They're going to get to the environment. There's going to be broken relationships. We would like everything to get there sequentially, mm-hmm. kind of in the order that we doctrinally depicted it somewhere. But that that doesn't really happen. And weird people work for each other, and this includes across services. So we've got to mitigate those vulnerabilities and make it so those forces aren't encumbered by their dependence, but instead they have independence and an interdependence. So they have the ability to work with each other and then find alternate means of sustainment. So commercially or through some other coalition partner that mm-hmm. is there. The other thing I wanted to say very quickly is that the reason I think you need both pieces in your approach is because if you just try to mitigate the duration of time, eventually the math will stop you and you will find stopping points in capacity. So, for example, an airlift, and expeditionary operations are highly, highly dependent on airlift because of the responsiveness. So you're just going to get to this point where you can't get any faster.
Right. There are physical limits
right.
even to how fast jets
and
can
so
go.
That's why when you talk about aggregation and a combined approach, that's where I think that ties in, is because just saying, oh, well, let's get faster planes or let's get more planes. Well, getting more planes, that's pretty hard to do.
Yeah, that's going to be time reliant.
That's a very expensive. As well. And even if you did, you have to get more crews and so on and so forth. But let's just suppose you did. That would certainly put a big dent in the problem, but that alone is not going to solve the problem. It'll greatly reduce it, but that alone is not going to solve the problem. You're still going to have forces that are in contact, that have this dependency, if you haven't addressed it. And sure. So you've got to address that too.
So to sort of close out, if we were going to imagine that this podcast is going to hit the ears of the sort of right strategic leaders at the right places, the right policymakers, what are the things that you would like them as logistics professionals, what are the strategic level things you would like them thinking about and considering as they're making strategic level plans and decisions?
So I guess first off would be to relook how we prioritize the capabilities that we're purchasing, that we're trying to acquire and we're putting into place. So for as long as I've been in the Army, sustainment units have been really the back burner in consideration for what needs to be acquired, as well as the requirements that are driving while we have sustainment units. So I would prioritize what the end state is, what was the purpose of trying to do. We're studying expeditionary maneuver and how to sustain that. So if the effect that you want is to have a force delivered 7 days, 14 days into a theater, able to actually react to some type of scenario, what is it you want out of that? What effects do you want to be able to perform? Because then you have to look at what is it required to sustain that, and you have to build that into the program and plan as well.
Mm-hmm. So really thinking at the strategic level about what are the end states, what are the purposes and the goals, and then how do you achieve that, not just with forces but with the entire system that's behind the Army in this case.
Correct.
I would say to dovetail off of that, let's first define the problem. Let's define the environment and its accompanying challenges. Leading within those challenges are sustainment. Like I said, it's not difficult to deploy a force anywhere in the world. The difficulty is continuing to sustain that force and then build that theater, big or small. So, and then I would even go beyond that to say, how bad do we really want to do this? Let's just look at putting our money where our mouth is, and that goes to prioritization. If we don't really want to do this, then let's not do this.
Because it's going to probably be costly and time intensive just to solve the problems that you're talking about.
Absolutely. It's costly. It's time intensive. It's not just one special unit that can do these sorts of things. It's more complicated and more complex than that. It's units, it's systems, it's processes. The problems extend all the way back to the United States. It's not just the unit itself. And there's a myriad of important things to us, especially in the Army. The range of military operations we have is beyond, I mean, is last count was 16. It's probably something different now. Expeditionary was one part of that. So if we want to be good at this, that we need to identify that, and that should resonate through our priorities, because it's a zero-sum game. If we think one thing is important, we choose to invest in that, by default, we're choosing not to invest in something else. We can't invest in everything because resources aren't unlimited. So if we really want to do this, we need to reflect that in the priorities that get resourced and the approaches that fall out of that.
Great, thanks. Bobby, any last words from you?
If I could recommend something to sustainment leaders, it would be basically that we need to communicate laterally. We need to have a cross-functional mindset. We need to be all on the same line of effort going towards expeditionary operations, and not be separated by our stovepipes.
Sure. So I think great advice going up. So maybe it will get heard out there. It'll be out there in the world. Thanks so much for joining me today.
I've really enjoyed the
conversation. I've learned a lot. And we're signing off from the War Room Podcast.
And that concludes our program. Thank you for listening. The views expressed in this podcast reflect those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views, policies, or positions of the U.S. Army or the Department of Defense. Let us know what you think. Provide us your feedback, comments, or suggestions through our webpage at warroom.armywarcollege.edu. And have a great day.